Live from Sacramento, California.
Woke up quick at about noon.
Featuring Damian Barling.
Yes, I absolutely still love Russell Westbrook. So what?
And Kenny Caraway.
Sometimes you really just vibing out.
This is D-Lo and KC.
I'm the street's voice out west. Legendary self-made progress. Last time that I checked.
On ESPN 1320.
I know you didn't think we were going to take the day off, man. We got football coming up this weekend. We are so happy you have decided to make us a part of your Labor Day. Welcome in to D'Lo and KC here on Sacramento's number one sports station, ESPN 1320. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. Wasn't overly impressed with the NBA this weekend, Kenny. We got the Lakers evening the series with the Rockets. Bucks, they survive another day. All eyes on Giannis Antetokounmpo. We'll get to that. We'll get to all of the NBA news as well as some news and notes on your San Francisco Giants as well. Coming up in about 17, 18 minutes or so. But, bruh, we got a little hype for it, Kenny Caraway, on Friday. Yeah. We started talking about different NFL storylines. We started talking about, hey, what about this? What about that? What about the San Francisco 49ers? What do we got here? What do we got there? Mm-hmm. And I remember signing off thinking, man, I think I'm excited for football.
Like, I
wasn't before, but I think I am now. And here we are 3 days away from the start of the NFL season. We've got contract extensions to talk about. We've got Hall of Famers signing in new locations. We got the 53-man roster set. It looks like your man, Debo. It's like Debo's going to be ready. Or I don't know if he's going to be ready. But it looks like he's going to be active week one when the San Francisco 49ers open up things up against the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah, I mean, you know how I feel about that, Damian. I'm a little nervous about bringing him back week one. But at the same time, you know, look, these are football players, man. You know, this is what they do. I don't think if somebody gets hurt when they come back, I don't ever think they're 100%. If we're being honest, you know what I'm saying? They're just to the point where they can play, you know, they can fight through it. So it's on brand. It's on par for what football players do. And if he says he's good to go and if he gets the clearance, time to put him out there week one.
Anything particularly surprising for you in the 53-man roster setup? We'll get to the other because there are some kind of surprising things happening across the NFL, but as it pertains to the San Francisco 49ers, anything that really catch your eye when that 53-man roster was set?
No, not really. I mean, I guess the one thing that stuck out to me, I don't know if it, you know, surprised me or anything, but it definitely stuck out to me, is that they're going to run this thing back. I know we miss DeForest Buckner and there's no Emmanuel Sanders, but other than that, they're going to run this thing back. And I look at that when I talk about somebody like Juwan Jennings at wide receiver, Michael Hastings at running back, these rookies that, you know, a lot of people had buzz for in the training camp and said they had played really well. And, you know, they thought they could make the roster. And Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, they simply said, okay, we'll take our chances and see if we can get them on the practice squad, which they got both of them. That's a good thing. And we're going to run this back with the guys that we have. We're going to run this back with the crew that got us to the Super Bowl last year, and we're going to try and do this thing again. So that spoke up to me. I don't know if it spoke good or bad. I don't know, but I definitely recognized it.
You know, so that I think that brings up another interesting topic, as we were talking about before the show. Like, when the expectations for a team are different, like the whole season plays out different. Like, I mean, what were the 49ers – not last year, but the year before. It was like 4 wins, 5 wins,
yeah,
6. I know what it was. It wasn't good.
Right.
That's what it was.
That's 12.
I thought it was 4-12, but yeah. I know it wasn't good.
Yeah.
And, you know, they come out and they went, oh, okay. They won the first game, won the second game, the third, the fourth, the fifth. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, they're better than we expected. How much better than we expected? Mm. Then they're at 8-0, and all of a sudden, you know, they're there playing in the last game of the season. So now the expectation on them is a little bit different. And I don't know if the expectation is to go to the Super Bowl, because you and I have talked about this. Just as difficult as it's going to be for the Kansas City Chiefs to get back to the Super Bowl, it's going to be equally as difficult for the San Francisco 49ers. And in my eyes, it's going to be more difficult because, and I hate to be a broken record, the Seattle Seahawks.
Mm-hmm.
you know, neither of us are very high on the Los Angeles Rams, but I think they have the roster is there, and Aaron Donald is there. So immediately they're going to get credibility in
Jalen Ramsey as well.
They're going to get immediate credibility in my book. And then I think you and I are both of the belief, a team that always seems to give the San Francisco 49ers at least some, you know, some contest, some struggle, is the team that they're playing on opening weekend on Sunday, and that's the Arizona Cardinals. We both expect that team to take another step. Maybe not a monumental step, but a step.
Yeah.
And you've got the acquisition of a wide receiver there who's pretty good. You've got Kyler Murray there who's pretty good. You still got Larry Fitzgerald who's pretty good. You've got a lot of things going for you, and all of those teams are in the 49ers division. And now the 49ers ain't going to catch nobody by surprise.
No. So the other thing that we got to ask ourselves, though, Damian, did the 49ers get better? I think a lot of times people look around and they see these other teams that made moves and did some things, and they say, okay, they got better. And a lot of times it's to catch up to a team like the 49ers. I mean, the NFC, defending NFC champions, it's to catch up with them. And sometimes they look at what they were able to do and what they have on their roster, and they say, that's good enough. Everybody's chasing us. Sometimes that's not good enough. Sometimes it ended up being good enough. But in this particular case, I think we have to ask ourselves, did the Niners subtly get better? All right. And when we go down the list, we look at the things. Jimmy Garoppolo, another year removed from the ACL. The Niners added Jet McKinnon. They might have found Raheem Mostert last year. Remember, Raheem Mostert didn't really get the run that he got until, I don't know, week 12,
yeah,
something like that. So now they got a full season of him. You add Brandon Ayuk. You know, people are loving what he's able to do. Jordan Reed, if he stays healthy. Trent Williams, if he's, you know, able to stay healthy. Trent, I'm just still baffled.
That's a massive acquisition. Yeah.
I'm baffled by Trent Williams. I really am, because he looks so much different than any offensive lineman I've seen in the game right now. So, you know, you talk about those things, and you got to ask yourself, did they get better? Well, everybody else got better. Did they get better?
I think there's a couple of things to take away from what you just said. One, if you, and rightfully so, don't pay a lot of attention to the Washington football team, or maybe you don't pay a lot of attention, maybe the NFC East, because of who's in the division, automatically turns you off. Maybe you're not aware of how, maybe you're just aware of him as a, you know his name because you know he's a good football player, but maybe you're not as aware how great Trent Williams is at his position, like how great of a football player Trent Williams really is, and that acquisition by the San Francisco 49ers, because it felt like every time someone became available or every time a conversation started about a particular superstar, whether it was Jalen Ramsey or whoever, hey, I wonder if the 49ers will be aggressive and do this. I wonder if the 49ers will be aggressive and do that. We've done it with Earl Thomas. We've done it with, you know, this player,
Josh,
and this player.
Gordon.
I wonder if the 49ers will be aggressive. They were aggressive with the most important player that could be had in this offseason, and that was Trent Williams. So that right there is a massive upgrade in staying away from Brandon Ayuk evaluations and staying away from, you know, different evaluations from the preseason and things like that. I'll jump on two things, and you noted them both. Jerick McKinnon. I was super high on the 49ers signing Jerick McKinnon several years ago. And we haven't really, you know, luck, injuries just has derailed his opportunity with the San Francisco 49ers, but they didn't give up on him. They've kept him around. They've got, you know, that stable of running backs back there. And it's like, all right, okay, you know, the 49ers approached the running back position a little bit differently. But I really like Jerick McKinnon, and I have no idea what version of him we're going to get. The fact that we're approaching opening day and he's healthy, you know, knock on wood, get him through the rest of the week. That's an exciting note, I think, for San Francisco 49ers. And the other one, and for me, this is the most important one, and it's one that I'm going to harp on the entire season, it's the Jimmy Garoppolo note. It's the fact that Jimmy Garoppolo spent all of last offseason rehabbing. He spent all of last offseason trying to get his knee better, trying to get his leg better, trying to get his mobility back, trying to do things like that, and not working within the system, not working with his receivers, not working on things like that that you would do to expand your game or get better. Right. He was working to get healthy. Those are two very, very different things. And the fact now that he has had, you know, granted, it's not a normal offseason by any stretch of the imagination, but he had an offseason where he wasn't rehabbing. You know, everybody has been under the same circumstances as far as the uniqueness of this offseason has been. And I think that's one of the biggest, that's going to be one of the biggest footnotes for the San Francisco 49ers this year, is that I expect all of that conversation about all the 49ers winning in spite of Jimmy Garoppolo, I think all of that dies this year because we get an opportunity to see how good of a quarterback he really is. And I believe that he is a good one.
I'm with you. I'm with you. Jimmy is my guy. I have faith in Jimmy Garoppolo. The other thing that when you mention about him going into this year, you can make the argument that, you know, at the beginning of the year, he's feeling himself, you know, getting acclimated to being back, to being on the field and gameplay or whatever the case may be. Look at that second half of the season. Look at the games that he had. The New Orleans game is in there. The Arizona game is in there. Mm-hmm. The Rams game. The second Seattle game where he was phenomenal. It doesn't really get talked about because they ended up running for all the touchdowns they got. But they were Jimmy was phenomenal in Seattle with the season on the line. Absolutely phenomenal. And then in the playoffs, I mean, he had a little bit of a hiccup against Minnesota. They didn't need him against Green Bay. And I give him a B minus for his Super Bowl performance or whatever the case may be. But I say all that to say, I feel as he got more comfortable, he got better throughout the year. They started to put a little more load on him and he got better. Now you're able to do that from the start of the season.
Sure.
And I agree with you. I think Jimmy is going to take off in a major way this year. There's something else that you said, Damon, and I want to ask you something real quick. You mentioned Trent Williams and their acquisition of Trent Williams. Would you say that's the biggest acquisition in the league this offseason? And I know it's off the top of your head. You don't have them all in front of you, but you got Jamal. Well, is it bigger than Jamal Adams? I think so.
Yes, but is it bigger than Jamal Adams? Yes. Is it the biggest acquisition in the league? No, because there's a former MVP playing for a coach who's won 6 Super Bowls. I'm going to go with that as the biggest acquisition of the league. Now, you can go the other way. You can go with the quarterback who went to Tampa Bay and is lining up with Bruce Arians, and that might be the biggest acquisition of the league. I'm high on Trent Williams and what the San Francisco 49ers have done. I believe it's below those two. I think most people – I'm not going to speak for most people. I would put – I'd probably have to put Brady and the Bucks first.
Yeah, I'll go there one.
But right behind it, like, I mean – 1A, 1B is Cam.
See,
Cam
you're going
to the Patriots.
Cam. I would go Trent above Cam. No, I would go Trent because I don't think I don't think that the Patriots can win the Super Bowl.
Okay.
I don't think they can win the Super Bowl. Trent Williams allows you to possibly win a Super Bowl.
ESPN engineer Jesse, I want you to go ahead and bookmark this 12-13.
They're better than the Chiefs. 7th.
We're going to run it back. I'm not saying they're better than the Chiefs.
They can't be. No. No, they're not better than the Chiefs. I don't think they're better than Baltimore.
Kenny Caraway, are you writing off the New England Patriots before week one?
As a Super Bowl champion, yes, absolutely.
As a Super Bowl contender?
Now we're talking semantics.
I'm gonna give you 4 minutes to think about that. I'm gonna pose that question to you again. The Lakers, even the series with the Rockets, but have the Lakers even looked impressive at all in this postseason? We'll dive into that. We're just getting started. Happy Labor Day. We're happy you're here with us. It's D-Lo. It's KC. It's Sacramento's number one sports station, ESPN 1320.
D-Lo and KC. D-Lo and KC continues on ESPN 1320.
Kenny Caraway clearly getting his Labor Day started, his Labor Day barbecue started nice and early. I think you've got a beverage tucked away off camera here.
I don't drink on the job, but I did, you know, some Cuervo yesterday, you know, a little tequila, you know, mixed with a little lemonade, had a couple of cups of that. I'm feeling good, feeling real nice.
This conversation did not end when we went to commercial break. Kenny said to me, well, I don't even know if the Patriots are going to win their division.
I said it.
You're obviously siding with the Buffalo Bills here in this
absolutely
situation. You think the Buffalo Bills could win that division again?
Absolutely. Like I said to you in the break, Didn't they knock out the Patriots in the playoffs? Hello.
Last
in
year.
Foxborough? Hello.
They upgraded quarterbacks.
They upgraded quarterbacks. Oh, isn't that the number one transition? That was What?
I was kidding. I was only kidding.
I'm gonna get so many hate tweets
for that.
They might have really upgraded the position though.
Stop it.
You know what I said last week. I ain't going back on that. They might have really upgraded the position.
Well, I mean, it'll be fascinating. It's whether you like it or not, it's a story to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Belichick without Brady and Brady without Belichick. Now, you're going from there are a lot of football people who think very, very highly of Bruce Arians. And, I mean, Cam Newton, like, give me a break. He's a former MVP. He's coming off of injuries. I'm still one of the most baffling things to me. We have some sound from WEEI with Cam Newton. As a matter of fact, we don't really need to hold it off. We can run it back now. This is Cam talking to WEEI about linking up with Belichick, about linking up with the Patriots, and the whole process of becoming a New England Patriot.
Because I'm a black athlete, a quarterback that for a long time I've been unapologetic, is because I have, you know, carried myself in a way that the media hasn't gave me my just due. But yet at the same time, I do understand that, and I don't have no type of resentment towards that. I embrace who I am. I embrace the moment. I live in the moment. You know, one of the quotes that I live by is Carpe Diem. So just to see, like, well, we've heard this about Ken. We've heard that he's a prima donna. He's this and that. But yet, when you really put a microscope to who I really am, it's a lot of people, a lot of favoritism that has not been favorable for my benefit. But yet, through it all, I'm not going to make this about me. When I go back and think about those 86 days and nights where I was unemployed and a free agent, and I'm thinking to myself, like, damn, or Jesus, like, nobody wants to come get, like, what am I missing? And, you know, to come to an opportunity where it in my eyes, feels like the best opportunity for me, and if everything is equal, it just puts a lot of things in perspective. And, you know, when I was named captain and even a starter for that matter, you know, kind of made me for a second, you know, like, damn, like, okay, yeah, like I'm finally seeing the residuals of hard work.
Cam Newton, WEEI in Boston. He goes on to call his partnership with Bill Belichick a match made in heaven.
Okay. We will see. Look, I'm rooting for Cam. I haven't always been the biggest Cam Newton fan, but I'm rooting for him in this case. I thought he was treated unfairly by the rest of the league as far as how long he had to wait for all this stuff to go down and, you know, people talking about, you know, is he washed? Is he done? All this other stuff. Hey, man, go out there and ball out.
He signed for pennies, dude.
That too. That
too. He signed for pennies.
Yeah. So, yeah, man, I'm rooting for him. I just don't know if they can win the NFC East. I don't know if they have enough.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, we'll see.
AFC East. I said NFC East.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I've never been the biggest Julian Edelman fan, but I don't know who his. I mean, it's got to be his top target there. That's
I'm still
kind
interested
of the way
in N'Keal Harry. I was huge on him coming out of Arizona State, so I don't know what happened last year and, you know, why I didn't click with Tom. But I think maybe him and Cam might have something cooked up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. Again, it's another one of those storylines that we're going to be watching all year long. There's a ton of storylines. We'll dive into a whole bunch of them here as the day rolls along. We're just 3 days away from the start of the NFL season. Teams have named their starting quarterbacks. Some of them are head-scratching. Jadeveon Clowney has picked its team. He has picked his team. He'll be with the Tennessee Titans. We'll lay all of that stuff out for you. Let's shift the basketball here because we really haven't had a chance to dive into that. The Rockets won game one way back on Friday. Mm-hmm. But then they come out there down by 21 in game two. They outscore the Lakers 41-23 in the third quarter. But ultimately, it is the Lakers that walk away with the game two victory, and they even things out. A couple of notes that are worth pointing out to you, Kenny, as they pertain to our radio show. Anthony Davis, 34 points. Mm. LeBron James, 28 points. I know you were on the lookout for 60 points. They are now 16-1 when those two combine for 60-plus points. The Lakers are 16-1. Only duo better, Kobe and Shaq.
And boys balled out in game two. I liked the way Anthony Davis approached game two. You know, he was more aggressive getting to the cup, more aggressive finishing at the basket, and that opened up his game, you know, on the perimeter. When I say perimeter, I'm talking mid-range or stuff like that. It opened that up because in game one, I mean, it just seemed like they played a Jedi mind trick on him. You know, he was out here going back, taking his little jump shots to start. Like, I know eventually he's going to take his jump shots, but I want you to go inside out. Start pounding the ball inside, get to the free throw line, things of that nature, and then start getting your mid-range game going. It looked like he started that from the start. He pounded those little boys inside in game two. LeBron was really good. And the Brody was terrible. The Brody was terrible.
That might have been – I watched a lot of Russell Westbrook. I am the top of that fan club. That might have been his worst game in like 3 years.
He was super wild.
He can shoot – like he can be off in his shot. Like that's not – that's not abnormal for Russell Westbrook at all.
Right.
But he was off in his shot. He was turning the ball over. Like he wasn't, you know, he was running a lot of hockey assists, right? Like he wasn't finding guys, you know, he was, guys were either making the extra pass or they were passing on their shot or they, you know, after, you know, knocking down that 21-point lead, the Rockets actually, not only did they come back from 21 down, they took the lead at one point. But then, you know, the Lakers kind of turned things on and I felt like, the Rockets, perhaps captained by Russell Westbrook, they got hesitant. I think Russ knew his shot wasn't falling, so he stopped taking it. He tried to find guys. Guys, they got hesitant. They all started looking at Harden. Harden wasn't enough to carry him the rest of the way, and it was the Lakers who closed it out.
The other thing that I did not like about Russell Westbrook, and I don't know if this goes on him or if it goes on Mike D'Antoni, but when he got his fifth foul, he was what's more than a turnstile. Like he was more than that. He was just a ole gaping hole. Let me valet you to the bucket because he was afraid of getting that sixth foul. He didn't make any contact with the guy that he was guarding and just straight line to the basket. And he did that a couple of times. The Lakers recognized that's how he was going to play it. And they started picking up on that and they got themselves going offensively because of that. I think In the future, knowing exactly that's how Russell would approach it, I think Mike D'Antoni would get him out immediately with that fifth foul.
D'Antoni doesn't coach like that.
Well, that's why he might be unemployed.
Well, he's not going to be unemployed. He's going to be coaching the Indiana Pacers, but he's not going to be coaching the Houston Rockets if this series goes. You had to have been surprised that the Rockets won game one, though.
I was surprised. You know, I made the tweet. I mean, it don't mean nothing.
No, it doesn't. I wasn't surprised that they won a game because I didn't think that this was going to be a sweep. I didn't think you needed to get two brooms at the 99-cent store. But I was surprised by the way that they won because I feel like at some point still we didn't even see it yesterday. What were they yesterday? They were, well, maybe we did. They were 22 of 53. They shot
53.
Shot 53 three-pointers yesterday. But, you know, I told you I felt like at some point in this series – there was going to be a game where they shot close to 60 threes. You know, they'll break the record at some point, like 56, 57, whatever the record is. They'll break that, but they'll wind up hitting more than half of them. Right. And that'll be the game that they're hot. Russ is hot. Everybody's playing well. Ball is moving. Everybody's confidence building. That wasn't it. They were just kind of jacking the shots up, and they weren't falling. Russell Westbrook was 4 of 15 from the field, 1 of 7 from 3, 1 of 3 from the foul line, and only 4 assists. That was the number that got me the most. He couldn't get anything going with the shot not falling, and then, of course, the 7 turnovers to cap on to only the 10 points. Just a disastrous day for us.
A tough night for the Brody. And when getting on the Rockets, I mean, they actually did start hitting threes. Like, that's how they got back into the game. That's how they closed the 21-point deficit. Daniel House was on fire. But in the fourth quarter, I don't know the final numbers, but I know at one point, I think they were like 1 of 12 from beyond the arc in the fourth quarter, let alone. And that's kind of when the Lakers started pulling away. So I wasn't ready to bring out the brooms. I wasn't ready to go to the Dollar Tree and get another one because from Lakers Rockets. But I did think it was going to be a 5-game series. I mean, I'd be surprised if it went 6. I don't know if the Rockets win another game in the series.
I still feel like they could. I don't feel like they fell into one yet. I feel like they're going to fall into one. They won game one. They just, the Lakers weren't sharp. I didn't think the Rockets were particularly sharp, and they got it done. Yeah. You know, Russ played well enough to a certain point. James Harden played well enough. They had a couple of things go their way. They wound up getting the win. I mean, every highlight, if you didn't watch the game, you would have thought the Lakers won by 40 because every 2 minutes, Bleacher Report was pumping out some sort of highlight of LeBron James disrespecting Russell Westbrook in some way, shape, or form.
And that's what happened to me. I didn't watch until the fourth quarter, and I was just on the Twitter and, you know, on the app, and every time LeBron's dunking over Russ, LeBron's blocking his shot, I'm like, man, this must be ugly. And I go and check the score, and the Rockets are up by like 4.
You know, he hit him with a two-hand chase down. Mm. And the reason, one of my favorite attributes of Russell Westbrook, he hits a 3 in the fourth, puts the Rockets up big. You start to get this feeling, oh, the Rockets are going to win this game one. He turns to where the, I don't know, 24 family and friends are sitting,
and he starts
barking. I mean, four-letter word barking. Like, he's yelling like he is in enemy territory.
Yeah.
Like, yeah,
all the kids are over there. All the kids are over there.
Probably his, Giannis's kids. Like, Giannis's baby came to watch a game. Like, who knows? Probably just the whole kids section.
Yeah, and he reacted
exactly as he would if he was in a, you know, sold out Golden 1 Center in overtime, and they just got the go ahead score. Like, he reacted the same way.
I love the Brody. I recognize all his flaws and shortcomings, but, you know, I love the guy, man.
He's, you know what's wild too, and I, you know, you never know how someone feels at the end of a game. He's still incredibly explosive.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know if he can be explosive for an entire game, because you see it, like, you see it at moments during a game, like, he, when he wants to get to the basket, he's going to get there.
Right.
Sometime, you know, he missed some layups yesterday because he explodes to the basket and he winds up getting underneath it into where what should be a lay-in becomes like this awkward layup. And sometimes it falls, sometimes it doesn't. But I wonder if he still has the, you know, I think you know what I mean by this term, 48-minute game explosion.
Yeah. And I don't think he does. He's older. I mean, he's probably been in 11 years now at this point.
I was going to say 10, but yeah, I mean, yeah, that sounds about right. He's got to be up there.
He's probably about 31, 32, maybe about 32 years old. So yeah, he can't play at that level that we used to see him in OKC, 48 minutes,
but then,
seven
of course,
game series. You know,
with all of that said, 17th year in the league, dude gets his head above the rim on an alley-oop. And speaking of alley-oop, Rajon Rondo was phenomenal yesterday.
He
is one of the most unpredictable, like, X-factors in the entire league.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I had a stat here. Lakers were 11 of 15 off of Rondo's passes.
It's
like
crazy.
Those are Rondo to DeMarcus Cousins numbers. Like, I don't know if Rondo ever loved anyone more than he loved DeMarcus Cousins that year. He led on a terrible Sacramento Kings team. He led the league in assists. And I think I had a number once that said, like, 70% of his assists that year were to DeMarcus. Like, it was something totally absurd. But he is, you know, when you listen to, you know, Hubie Brown, you listen to Doc Rivers, you listen to coaches like that, they'll say he's one of the most, he has one of the most incredible basketball minds in the entire league, and he sees things before they happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of us will, especially, you know, after his time here, we'll look at Rondo. We look at, you know, some of his personality antics. We look at his quirks and use that to kind of diminish his play when he's on, man. He makes a difference for guys. Like, I think the Lakers had 41 bench points yesterday. He makes a difference from, you know, LeBron to Caruso to player 11, 12, and 13.
Yeah. I mean, Rondo's always not been a guy that I've been attached to, just because it's just a personal quirk with me personally. I don't like my guards that can't shoot. I don't like point guards that can't shoot. I need you to be able to shoot. And he can't make free throws. He can't make threes. He can't shoot. But his IQ for the game is what has allowed him to be as effective in this league and as a point guard, because it's no secret that he can't shoot, but he's still effective out there. And then you look at what happened yesterday, last night, and he was actually hitting some jump shots. And if he's hitting some jump shots, you just got to tip your hat and say, we ain't getting it done tonight. You know what I mean? Because when he has that going, there's not much that you can do if you're the Rockets or any other team.
You think he'll coach? That's a tough personality.
I know.
But
I cannot imagine it.
There will be a head coach somewhere falling over themselves to try to get Rondo on his coaching staff.
I think he'd be a good coach if he ever decided to do it. I think he would understand the game. I don't know if he could manage people the way that maybe you need to as a coach.
Could Rondo manage a player like Rondo?
Oh no. They would no.
They'd fight, right?
Oh yes. Yes, that would be as Charles Barkley would say, they're going to be moving some furniture if those two are in the same locker room. No, he can't coach Rondo.
Chris Middleton became the second Bucks player in history with 35 points, 8 rebounds and 8 assists in a playoff game. The only other Milwaukee Buck to do it. It's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He did it twice. Chris Middleton had 36 points, 30, KC, in the second half.
Woo! Woo!
And in overtime. Bucks avoid the sweep. Giannis Antetokounmpo had 19 before leaving with an injury. He sprained his ankle again. The reports after the game were he wanted to come back. He was fighting to come back. They said, just absolutely not. There's no way we're allowing you to get back there on the floor. He has not been ruled out for Game 5 yet, but the belief is he is not going to play.
Yeah, that's a tough turnaround. You know, one day on an ankle like that, you know, I've had those type of sprained ankles, and that's, I mean, you can't even, the next day, like today, Giannis, I bet he could barely even walk. Like, that's always the worst day, is the following day you slept on it, and that morning you wake up and, you know, the blood hadn't gotten there yet, and it's so painful. So, I mean, that's hard to say if he'd play tomorrow. It's tough.
The blood hasn't gotten there yet. Like, let that sentence run through your brain a little bit.
Oh, my gosh. That morning after, them things hurt, boy.
Well, he's still in the Aircast. Mm-hmm. I saw him just before our show started. They showed him walking around the facility. He's still in his Aircast, and he's moving exactly like he was when we saw him leaving the arena yesterday. Mm. I'm sure he wants to play. I'm sure, you know, the Bucks were all about, let's win it for, you know, Giannis. Let's, like, you know, lift up our leader. Let's do all of that stuff. Let's not get swept. We're number one seed, the whole deal. It's one game at a time. Let's go get business done. All that we got to do is win one game. We don't have to win four. We just got to win one. And, you know, they were able to do that. Now, they were able to do that from the time that Giannis went out until the end of the game, which absolutely should 100% be commended. I think it's a whole different scenario when you're talking about starting the game.
Mm-hmm.
Without Giannis Antetokounmpo and then having to play that way through four quarters. And I think Jimmy Butler was the member of the Miami Heat who said, we saw Giannis leave and we kind of just, we chilled. Like, we relaxed. We thought we had him.
Yeah, that's what Doc Rivers talked about earlier in the playoffs when Kristaps Porzingis went down, where he said, as a coach, he was looking at like, I don't like this, because there's a natural letdown from your players sometimes. And that could have been, you know, what happened with Miami on Sunday afternoon. Milwaukee gets credit. I've been very hard on Chris Middleton for the last 2 years, especially in the playoffs, in late game situations, because he hasn't come through. Let's just say what it is. He hasn't been that guy late in games, or even in the biggest of games. He has not come through. But yesterday, he made some huge shots with pressure on him, double teams, in big moments. And I don't want the guy to fail, so I hope this triggers, you know, this is maybe something that he had to get over, and now he's going to be clutch all the time. Like, I like Chris Middleton. I think he's a good basketball player. So him getting over that mental hurdle, maybe, you know, hitting these big shots, maybe that propels him to be able to do that all the time now. And the Bucks are going to need that moving forward, regardless of Giannis plays in Game 5 or not.
Speaking of big shots, Tyler, I'll be your hero. First player to make four go-ahead three-point field goals in the final minute of a fourth quarter or overtime in a single season, including the playoffs, since...
I'm drawing a blank.
The unanimous MVP of the 2015-16 season, Steph Curry.
Wow.
Tune in tomorrow when we debate why Tyler Hero is the next Steph Curry.
Did you see the, I don't mean to interrupt you, but did you see the clip? They played an old clip of First Take. I think it was like a year ago when the question, I don't even know why we're asking this question, but the question was for the game on the line, would you take Iggy or Steph with a shot? And Max
Andre
goes,
Iguodala hit a shot.
Absolutely. Without a doubt, I'm taking Iguodala.
That's so stupid. I was so like, and that's there was a moment like that was last year, the year before. There was a moment where, and I enjoy Max Kellerman's radio show, and I enjoy Max Kellerman. Period.
Yeah, yeah.
But there was a moment he turned, like he was the normal one, like he was level-headed. You know, he brought perspective, but there was a moment where it was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Is he being serious or was he kidding? And he wasn't kidding when he said he'd rather have Iguodala take the
dead serious. And it was just the reactions that you got. There was laughter, there was eye roll. Every reaction that you should have in that moment was had. It was phenomenal. The other one he said, I can't remember exactly.
De'Aaron.
I don't want to misquote him, but he said something about Kawhi and Kobe. Did he say Kawhi was more clutch than Kobe or
yes?
And Jay Williams just kind of walked off.
He said Kawhi was more clutch than Kobe. But the one that I remember, and Kings fans will remember, De'Aaron was on set of First Take. And Kellerman, they wrap up the interview, and Kellerman goes, well, I can't wait to have you playing for the Lakers in a couple of years. It's like, oh, so this is a full-on heel turn. I see. You have gone full, like, Paul Heyman on us right now. Like, and to De'Aaron's credit, he's like, no, dude, that's not happening, but, like, cool, yeah, whatever. But, yeah, I don't know. Kellerman, he turned. He went heel on us.
Yeah.
By the way, if you weren't with us last week, you can catch up on the show on the radio.com app anytime you want. We're DVRing this show. If you missed our open, just use the rewind feature. Search radio.com in your app store. Hit the download button. Register completely free. Search ESPN 1320. Hit the heart. We'll alert you every single day when we go live. We've learned last week how much you love numbers as they pertain to a franchise history. The Bucks. They're obviously looking to come back from a 3-0 deficit.
Mm.
Teams all time went down 3-0, attempting to come back. 0-139. The Bucks would be the first, and they got a long way to go.
They got a long way to go. I'm trying to think of if I've ever seen anyone in the NBA force a Game 7. I remember the Blazers did it with the Mavericks. I really don't have the year here, but I would say this was around the 2005 range, maybe 2004, 2003. But it was a Blazers team with, like, Bonzi Wells. I think Rasheed was still there. But they were down 3-0 and forced a Game 7. And I think that's the only time I've ever seen a Game 7 forced in the NBA playoffs after being down 3-0.
I think there have been a few, but we'll have to research those. Let's show some love before we wrap up this series. Bam Adebayo, 25 points. He has been just phenomenal in this series. 25, 10, and 5. The last member of the Miami Heat to put up numbers like that is now playing in Los Angeles. We've got more basketball to talk about as the day progresses. Somehow, this is a series again with the Celtics and the Raptors. We question whether that shot by OG was just prolonging the inevitable or whether the Raptors were able to build real momentum off of it. Well, we've got our answer, and we've got a hell of a series going on over there. We've got the Clippers and the Nuggets here on ESPN 1320 tonight. We'll dive into that. We've got to get back to the NFL. We haven't even discussed the big money that Deshaun Watson has signed for. We've got to touch on that. And
let me hold a dollar.
Yeah, just be clear. You were high on the Chicago Bears.
The high is okay. Let's relax with high. I have my eye on them. Let's put it that way.
Well, we're going to have our eye on him for a number of different reasons. We'll explain what that means as D'Lo and Casey roll along here on Sacramento's number one sports station, ESPN 1320.
D'Lo and Casey. D'Lo and Casey continues on ESPN 1320.
You want to connect with the show, by the way, shame on us for not letting you be a part of our Labor Day fun here. 916-349-1320. Again, we are live here with you today, and we're so happy to be with you. 916-349-1320. And on Twitter as well, at D'Lo and KC. Follow us across all our platforms, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all of that good stuff. We've got the teams that have been down 3-0 and battled back to force a Game 7. The Nuggets versus the Jazz in 1994. The Nuggets, they were down 3-0.
Wow. I remember that one being seven-game series. I didn't know they were down 3-0. Wow. It's crazy.
As I noted, the reason it was so forgettable is because it was 1994 when no one cared. Blazers, good memory on this one, partner. Blazers versus, well, I'm sorry, where Michael Jeffrey Jordan was playing in,
Birmingham.
That's why. Blazers versus the Mavericks. This is the one you were talking about. 2003, the Blazers were down 3-0. I keep looking at this list, looking for like a Tracy McGrady appearance somewhere in this.
Oh, man. 3-1 T-Mac. Man, it feels good to be in the second round, you know? Just feels really good.
Oh, T-Mac. And then Kenny Caraway's New York Knicks versus Kenny Caraway's Rochester Royals.
Yeah, I would have gone crazy that series. I would have just spontaneously combusted with that series.
Back in 1951, the Knicks were down 3-1.
3-0.
So there you have it. 3-0, sorry. Yeah, sorry. 3-0. Yeah, sorry. We had an interesting conversation before the show started, and Kenny, you know, brought this. You look at how the conversation in this show has kind of gone, where, you know, we're 3 days away from football, and there's a palpable excitement when football approaches. And I think it took a little bit longer to get here. The pageantry wasn't there. There was no Hall of Fame. There's been no preseason games. You know, everybody hates preseason, but there's this thing when you turn on the TV and you hear, you know, Al Michaels and Collinsworth call a football game. It's like, oh, it's football season. So, the things that you're used to seeing, I know, like, looking at the ratings, people have completely tuned out Hard Knocks this year, and I think a lot more has to do with, like, the pandemic and the nature of what the actual show is versus intrigue in the Rams or the Chargers.
Right.
But it's also Labor Day, and there are NBA playoffs going on right now. And we were, you know, you actually, I think the overwhelming belief is, the NFL, when it comes to hype, when it comes to excitement, like the NFL is king, but you're not so, that's not so cut and dry for you.
I'm not sure about that, Damian. I'm not sure about that. Now, look, I'm a basketball guy, right? I love me some hoops any way I can get it. And I feel that the NBA has put a huge dent and really closed the gap between this whole NFL is king thing and things of that nature. And, I mean, I know people are always going to point to the TV ratings or whatever the case may be. That reminds me, do you know what a Nelson box looks like? Would you know if Nelson box was
a
dropped
Nielsen
on
box?
Nielsen box?
Nielsen.
Do you know how to say it? I don't even know how to say it. Do you know what a Nielsen box even looks like? If somebody dropped it in your living room, would you know what this is?
Like, I'd probably call, like, the police. Like, I'd call a bomb squad. Like, there is this strange device.
Who has these boxes? Do you know anybody that has a Nielsen box?
I've never known anyone who's had one. Never.
So, look, don't even get me into that. I don't know what these numbers are. But I'm going to take the numbers for what they are. And I always point back to that and say,
welcome to radio, homie, because it's not that different. There's a little thing called a people meter that people walk around with. And
they really
and
came
they
up
listened
with a name for that. That was really imaginative, a people meter. Okay.
I think that's what it's called. I'm sure if our boss is listening, he'll message us. I think it's called a people meter or something like that. But yeah, that's it. And it picks up what you're listening to. Obviously, they're listening to ESPN 1320. They're listening to D'Lo and Casey. It picks up on their meter. It's the same thing. And it's just this small sample size. Ratings in television radio are a fascinating thing. But that is only a small portion of why this concept of yours is just terribly, terribly, terribly wrong.
How?
Well, the excitement for, because with every sport, it's like a marathon. Mm-hmm. 82 games. Double that for baseball. I think it's quadruple that for hockey. I think hockey is somewhere around 400 games during the regular season, and it's like a 500-game playoff. Yeah. But for football, it's 17 weeks. You get 16 games in one bye week. It's why no one play. You are a degenerate, ma'am or sir, if you are playing fantasy basketball or you're playing fantasy. Because the responsibility of setting a lineup every single night for baseball and for basketball is insane. But for football, oh, man, everybody is reading up, and they know what player is. They know what you know, the top running backs are on what team, and that's what creates fan interest. I don't think it's the actual game of football that garners the massive appeal that it has.
Right.
I think it's the gambling aspect to it. I think it's the fantasy football aspect to it. It's like, even if you're not a big gambler, you can get in on the, you know, on the office pool that allows this type of thing and allows you to do, you know, like confidence pools, you know, and or some people will do like pick'ems and you know, there's like 15 different gambling games that you could just play with your office alone that doesn't include fantasy. And I think that, and it's 16 games. That's it. It's 17 weeks. And I feel like that's what people like to digest.
Absolutely.
Versus 82.
Absolutely.
Versus 164.
I get that. Completely. And I think that is the huge advantage that football has. It's an event. Sunday is an event. And I know I love my events, right? I love Sunday. We ramp up all the way, you know, from Sunday to Sunday. You know, we decompress on Monday, then we ramp up to the next week, and, you know, crescendos on Sunday. I get that. But we'll go to the mom test, right? We'll go to the mom test, and let's use my mom. Maybe a little bit off because my mom's a basketball fan, Cheryl and Elk
Grove. Well, that's Cheryl from Elk Grove. Thank you.
That is correct. Yes, that is definitely what it is. She likes basketball. I don't think my mom, she's cool with football, but I don't think she could name 10 teams in the NFL, let alone 10 players. But if Giannis walks through her door, oh, she knows that's Giannis. If James Harden walks through that door, she knows. Steph, Clay, like, she can go off 25 NBA guys. And I think I don't think the casual fan can name 10 NFL players.
I think you're wrong, but I also think that's like the marketing of the NFL, which is, we've had conversations like this before where the NFL makes sure that you know that football is the star.
Mm-hmm.
The Shield is the star. The Dallas Cowboys, who are on the top of the Forbes list or near the top of the Forbes list every year, they're the star. The San Francisco 49ers are the star. The Philadelphia Eagles and the New York teams and the Washington football teams, they're the star.
Right.
And, yeah, maybe you get a Brady here and there, or you get a Manning, and I mean, if I asked you right now, who's the face of the league? Who is the face? Who is the definitive face of the NFL right now?
I would say Pat Mahomes. And I don't think my moms would know who Pat Mahomes is if she walked in his living room. I would.
If you put Patrick Mahomes' picture up on 1,000 TV screens and you put LeBron James' picture up on 1,000 TV screens, who do you think more people recognize?
LeBron.
They recognize Bron because in the NFL, you've got the helmets, you have the lack of marketing. You just don't have the same type of marketing with the NFL. But that's not an indictment of interest in the sport. That's the way the sport is marketed. And that's the way the athletes within the sport are marketed, in my opinion.
So, and that's a great point. Now, the other thing about this is there was a discussion a couple of weeks ago, maybe a couple of months ago, where somebody posed the question, I forgot who did it. I forgot what happened, but it was a comparison between Denzel Washington and Tom Hanks. And they said who had the better career. And I think Tom Hanks is great, but I thought that this came down to, if you were a follower, and I'm not trying to disparage anybody, but if you were a follower of pop culture or the culture, because if you're in the culture, you're like, Denzel, of course. Like, who's competing with Denzel? If you're a pop culture, Tom Hanks. Are you kidding me? The library that he has, nobody competes with that. And I almost feel like the NFL and the NBA has that. Now, here's an example I'll use. Game one of the NBA Finals. Who's there? Say, 2 years ago or whatever, Cavs, Warriors. Who's there? We got Jay-Z. We got Rihanna courtside. We got E-40 courtside.
But this is visibility, though. Like, you can't see. Like, the cameras rarely points out, like, who's on the sidelines. You don't think those same stars are on the sidelines of football games, or they're in, like, luxury boxes?
Yeah, but
like, it's
they
cool
might,
that
they might not be at the luxury boxes, but because they might be there, but they know if they're courtside, oh, the world is watching. This is a look that I'm courtside. NBA All-Star game.
So
courtside.
Maybe this
what
is,
does that courtside look like?
Maybe this is a culture versus pop culture thing, because you know who's sitting in the luxury box of an NFL game? George W. Bush and Bill Clinton and President Barack Obama. Like, they're the ones sitting in the luxury boxes.
Right,
you know what
right.
I mean?
And I don't think they're courtside at the NBA.
And that's probably where you're going to find Tom Hanks also. You're going to find him somewhere up there with Vince Vaughn and you know, those different guys.
That's so perfect. That is perfect, yes.
The visibility thing is different in the NFL, and it goes the same true for their fans, because the NFL loves it. I mean, it was a couple of years ago at Oracle. I went to the concert that was the night after this. Prince. Mm. Prince was, remember Prince walking through the walking to his seat? No one's going to miss Prince walking to his courtside seat at Oracle. Like, everybody is going to see that. And the NBA loves that. Hey, look who's here. It's a happening. That goes back to the 80s. Like, look, Jack Nicholson is here. But what was the Daryl Hannah, all of the
Spike Lee,
all
that. Damien, could you imagine, number one, could you imagine what the, ABC does? Oh, look who's here today. If Lakers Clippers was at Staples Center, I'll even take a step further. Let's assume the Knicks are a title team in the NBA Finals. Could you imagine? No, let's do that, because it could happen.
Not.
We would love that.
That's
Can
not
you
happening
imagine
ever.
The star power in the first five rows of Lakers Knicks NBA Finals? Are you kidding me?
But what's it matter?
Huh?
Well, what's it matter? Like, who cares? Like, why? Like, that doesn't matter.
This would be the event to be at. I don't know if the Super Bowl. I shouldn't say that.
See,
The Super Bowl is the event to be. I understand that, but the NFL don't even matter.
But that doesn't.
Like, the NFL don't matter. It's the Super Bowl.
But that doesn't matter in terms of overall. It's the place to be. It's like a prize fight. Everybody had to be at Ali Frazier at Madison Square Garden. Everybody had to be at, Pacquiao and Floyd when that debacle happened. Like, everybody, it's a prize fight. It's the place to be seen. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't have anything to do with, like, overall, like, popularity of the sport or mainstream appeal of the sport. And the fact that you
go to that.
I don't think so.
Football fans, we're in it, right? We're in it. We're in this sports life. So people are like, We know, like, people are crazy about the NFL. Once again, Cheryl from Elk Grove, she is not in it. And she cares a lot more about LeBron.
Well, you were a basketball player, though.
That's true.
Her baby boy was a basketball player. What if her baby boy was a football player?
I come from a basketball family. So I would say my aunts, my grandmothers, they more care about Steph and LeBron. They don't know nobody in the NFL. I'm almost confident saying, outside of Tom Brady, they don't know nobody. And if I forced, like last year, I forced them to watch but we had the Super Bowl party. It was big because the Niners were in it. NFC Championship game, they came over to watch because the Niners were in it, right? Mm-hmm. But if it was Carolina versus Arizona, they're going to Walmart on Sunday. They ain't caring about that. They're going to Target. Like, that ain't no big thing. But once again, like, these NBA finals,
there are 110 million people.
Miami.
There are 110 million people who think otherwise.
They watch what? The Super Bowl?
The Super Bowl. And that's the other part of the equation. Think about what you just said. It's similar to, think about WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. To go to the WWE perspective. WrestleMania tickets go on sale. What month are we in? If it was a normal year, WrestleMania was going to be held at the new Coliseum, the new SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles. This upcoming. You know when tickets would be going on sale? Right now.
Yeah.
It's September. They go on sale every September. You know when the main event is announced for WrestleMania?
Like a month before. Maybe.
It doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Like the event, like 80% of the tickets and all of the high end tickets, like $1,000 to $4,000 tickets will sell out in the first week because it's WrestleMania. It's the exact same thing with the Super Bowl. It's not the Chiefs versus the 49ers. It's not the Panthers versus the Patriots or the Broncos versus. It's none of that. It's the Super Bowl. That's all that matters to people.
I agree. And then an NBA can't match up with the Super Bowl, obviously. And I think, look, I make all this to say I understand where people say NFL is king, and they're probably right. I just think the NBA culturally has just as much of an impact, and it's closer than a lot of people give it credit for.
Culturally is an entirely different conversation. It's okay. Like the culture versus yeah. pop culture.
Yes.
They're very, very different. Yeah. The culture will always be the NBA. Mm. For reasons that, you know, Beyonce's there. And they're on camera. We see them. They might be at the SoFi Stadium box seats or the MetLife Stadium box seats in New York. They might be at the – doesn't Beyonce, like, own part of, like, the Rockets or the – Texans or yeah, maybe like all of them. Maybe she owns part of Texas, period.
Happy belated birthday to the queen, by the way. She had her birthday on Friday. That's the queen bee. That's the queen bee.
Oh, go ahead. Absolutely. Yeah. Not all of us forgot to wish her happy birthday, though. Some of us wished her happy birthday on our Be Heard platform.
I apologize to the queen. I didn't do it on my Be Heard platform. Sorry. But
you know
I apologize to my queen.
You know who is the point being, culture versus pop culture are different, and you outlined that perfectly when you were talking about the actors and their stretch. Like, it's different. Mm-hmm. The culture, it's always going to mean so much more. The NBA is always going to be significantly more impactful, if mm-hmm. you will, in that sense. Entity that's not going to be impactful as all, I feel like we should just point this out. The Giants are 20-21 right now.
Let's go.
There's not a lot of cultural impact or pop cultural impact when it comes to Major League Baseball, but they've survived a lot of – they've had a lot of bad stuff happen to them in their restart. Their things have not gone nearly as smooth as the NBA has, but, you know, we're about a third, depending on what team you are. Giants a smidge bit over a third way through the season. They're sitting right now in the first wild card spot, depending on what happens tonight in their third game against the Diamondbacks, and depending on what happens in the Rockies game as well, will kind of determine what happens next with them. But they're sitting at 20-21 right now, which is better than I think a lot of Giants fans thought it would be.
Yeah, I mean, and I just kind of realized that I gave a let's go for a 20-21 team.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, and I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it, too.
Talking about the 49ers.
Yeah, and that's where we're at right now. And they deserve that. They deserve to get a let's go for being 20-21. They've earned it at this point. And I look at it like this. Coming into the season, Damien got some technical difficulties. So you guys will hear me rant about the Giants real quick because they deserve it. Coming into the season, there's a lot of people, including myself, who didn't think that this team would be much of anything. It was a complete transitional year, and they weren't going to be able to do anything in the way of playoffs, in the way of competing. You know, they were in the NL West where they got the Padres and the Dodgers and all this. They didn't have a chance in hell. And to be at 20-21 and to be in a situation where, look, for all intents and purposes, they're going to make the playoffs. That's what it's looking like. Barring a complete collapse, which I don't see coming from this team, they're going to make the playoffs. And I don't care if they extended the playoffs to 45 teams. You're in the playoffs.
Then they'll definitely make the playoffs.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I don't even think this is a Giants situation. I think it's also – I don't believe in the Mets.
No.
Or the Marlins.
No.
Or the
Marlins,
Brewers.
If they
like,
played
I don't
all
believe
their
in
games,
any of those teams.
They have games to play to make up. Like, what's going on with that?
Like, I've seen enough from the Giants to where it's like, okay, like, yeah, they've got enough of a run in them. Again, you know, the season is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's you can only operate within the bounds of the season, and the season is what it is. Because in a normal situation, I don't know what any of this is worth. I don't know what a team a game under 500 at this point, you know, a third of the way through the season is worth. Right. But it's not a normal season, and they have a chance to get into the playoffs, and you know maybe, but you know. We were talking about expectations to start the show as they pertain to the San Francisco 49ers. Mm-hmm. The expectations for the Giants were not 20-21, 41 games into the season.
Not at all. Not at all. Like I said, I didn't think they were going to be very good at all. At one point I got a little upset with what I was seeing or whatever the case may be. I got a little emotional, right? But even then, I mean, that wasn't how I felt coming into the season. There was nothing to get emotional about because I didn't think they were going to be very good. I just wanted to see competent baseball. I wanted to see hope for next year or whatever the case may be. And I mean, they've exceeded that and they're going to make the playoffs. I believe, you know, nothing's set in stone, but I think they're going to make the playoffs. And I'm with that. It's not even a wild card game, Damian. It's going to be like I think the first round is like a best of three or a best of five or something like that. Like they're going to play a playoff series.
Does that work in their favor or against them?
It's hard to say. Obviously, I would think that it would work against them more than a game, because for a game, like anything could happen. Somebody can get hot. The opposing pitcher could have an off night, whatever the case may be. You could still win that way. In a series, obviously, you know, the better team should win the series. But in a short series, like a three-game series, best of three or a best of five, say Giants win game one. Okay, now you got two games to win one. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's okay.
I think that's another thing, too, you know, to bring back the conversation about football and basketball.
Mm-hmm.
In football, it's always one game.
Yes.
And you never know what's going to – like think about the – was it the Ravens and the Titans?
Mm-hmm.
If it was a best two out of three?
Yeah.
Would that have happened again? Like Tennessee ran over Baltimore. And, like, no. You know, Lamar Jackson is entering that – you know, this is a tough, tough year for him because – he's obviously coming off the MVP. The Ravens were very, very good regular season-wise last year.
Mm.
And now he has two playoff – I don't want to call them failures because that's not fair.
The first one I'm not going to give to him, though. Didn't he come in halfway there? And it was already set. They were down 10 or something when he came in. They were down. Yeah. I'm not giving the first – stop, Damian, and everybody else. No, I'm not giving him the first loss. What?
He has two playoff struggles in his career. You can frame it as rationally as you want to.
I take that back. Let me correct myself. I think he did start the playoff game his rookie year.
He did.
Harbaugh wouldn't let him pass. Harbaugh wouldn't let him pass until the fourth quarter. That's what it was. I remember that. Okay. I'll put that one more on Harbaugh, but fair enough. He started that game. You're right.
That no one's going to go, yeah, but the first one was on Harbaugh, unless you're having an extended discussion. He's in that dangerous territory where he's got 17 weeks where he has to follow up his MVP performance. He's got 16 games where he's got to follow up his regular season success.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has to do something when the postseason starts. And it's you know, in baseball, the wild card is, hey, I'm – kind of dig the playing games. Like those one game playoffs, those are super exciting. And part of the reason they're super exciting is because anything can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, once they're over, like they go away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of the excitement of like March Madness is the same way. It's not a series. It's one game in the NBA, in baseball, in hockey. It's a series. It's a series. Mm-hmm. It's a series. It's a series. But in football, it's in the NCAA tournament. It's one and done. What two sports events have more like mainstream interest than the NCAA tournament
mm-hmm.
and the Super Bowl?
None.
It's just one game.
And this is a nod to the NFL because that game on Friday between Rockets Lakers, I was running around. I missed like the first half, the first two and a half quarters. You know what I mean? And you know, I saw the fourth quarter, whatever the case may be, but I was never in a rush. Because I knew it was a series. If that was mm-hmm. a one-game situation, I'm watching from start to finish, you know, because anything mm-hmm. could happen in one game. So that's what the NFL gives you all playoffs and pretty much all year.
We got more NFL stuff to talk about, including what the Bears did and what the Titans did. We just mentioned them. By the way, I mentioned this. I watched, what was my Avengers? Mm-hmm. The first of the two that I wanted to watch, Infinity War. Okay, those are not standalone movies, not like at all. I did not know
what
was happening.
Those two are Infinity Wars and
Endgame.
Those two you got to watch together and in the way you have to watch them. The rest of them, I mean, I think you can come along as it goes.
I don't think so, dude. Or maybe like I was watching it like, okay, like I kind of have an idea what's going on, but not really. Like, and I knew who some of the characters were. Like, I've tried to watch Guardians of the Galaxy a couple of times and
never.
But there were a lot of people who showed up on screen that I felt like if I was in a movie theater, it'd be a really big moment, and I didn't know what was happening.
Yeah, the pop would have been huge.
I don't get this. So I'm in the camp now that those Avenger movies are not standalone, and for it all to work, you have to watch all 26 or 7 or whatever it is.
Probably so. For those two movies, yes. Yes.
Next quarantine, I'm going all in on the Avengers movies, man. We'll step back. We mentioned the Bears. Woo! Ken said he was keeping his eye on Chicago. Well, I think we're all going to be doing that. Adrian Peterson has found a landing spot. We've got more NFL news and notes. Plus, we've got basketball tonight. We've got the Clippers and Nuggets here on ESPN 1320, and the Raptors and Celtics are a series. All of that is D'Lo and KC continue here on ESPN 1320.
D'Lo and KC. D'Lo and KC continues on ESPN 1320.
We appreciate you for making us a part of your Labor Day festivities. Damian Barling along with Kenny Caraway. You can connect with us at D'Lo and KC on Twitter and Instagram. You can also connect with the station's page at ESPN 1320 as we are 3 days away from the start of the NFL season. A couple of notes. Adrian Peterson signs with the Detroit Lions. He just might be, I mean, I know he doesn't want to retire. He may just be team to team to team to team until he decides he's done or until the league decides for him that he's done. I mean, he's 35 years old. I don't know. I'm just presenting the story there. Name me a more uninteresting team than the Detroit Lions.
You can't do it.
They're pretty in a division that kind of feels interesting. I don't know. Mitchell Trubisky's been named the starter of the Chicago Bears. That's interesting. It's interesting for all the wrong reasons. Remember, they went and acquired Nick Foles, which means they got to pay Nick Foles for the next 3 years. I guess he didn't win the job, and that's more of an indictment on Nick Foles than it is on Matt Nagy. Like, how you – Mitchell Trubisky was, I think, inarguably, at least statistically, the worst quarterback in the NFL last year. And you couldn't take his job from him?
That's all bad. Look, you guys heard me. I said, look at the Chicago Bears. You know, I was feeling some type of way about the Chicago Bears.
Mm-hmm.
That was 100% on the premise that money-making Mitch was not going to be the starting quarterback. I thought Nick Foles would come in there, and he couldn't be any worse than money-making Mitch. So just being competent was going to put the Bears in a position where they could be, you know, they could contend in a division that doesn't have a dominant team. I thought maybe they could rise up. This changes everything, Damian. Changes everything. You talk about, I have my eye on the Chicago Bears. Well, guess what? I'm asleep. Where's the little emoji with the Z's and everything? I'm asleep on the Bears.
Uh-huh. Okay.
In a coma on the Bears.
Is there a coma emoji? I don't think so.
No,
we'll look.
We'll create one for Bears games.
Well, speaking of
money-making Mitch.
Did you give him that nickname?
No, man. Well, his name is Mitch. Money-making Mitch. With legendary character and Paid in Full. It fits.
I feel like Mitch Please would be better. Like, I mean, is Matt Nagy going to have to slap a Mitch? I think is better. Like, I just don't, like, there is nothing money-making about Mitch unless, of course, you're betting against him. Then you're bringing in the big bread. Matt Nagy was
Matt Nagy one.
By the way, it's also worth pointing this out. Cam Newton was available this offseason.
Yeah, yeah. That's where he was going to go. I thought Chicago was really going to make it happen.
I thought it was Los Angeles. I thought it was the Chargers or the Bears for Cam Newton. And I'm happy it was neither. I wouldn't have minded the Chargers so much. I actually really would have liked to have seen him in Los Angeles with Anthony Lynn and that defensive group there. But that's fine. He's in New England. He's in a great spot. Teddy Bridgewater was a free agent this offseason. Andy Dalton was a free agent this offseason. Jameis Winston. Where the hell is Jameis Winston? Off the top of your head. Does anybody know?
I say New Orleans. Am I right?
Did Jameis Winston...
I think he's in New Orleans. I lost track of Jameis, but I think he's in New Orleans.
Jameis Winston took
Jesse
Teddy
says
Bridgewater's
I'm place. Correct. He's with the Saints. Yeah.
He's not even the backup quarterback.
Licking his fingers in New Orleans.
Taysom Hill is.
Oh, don't
Marcus Mariota was available.
Yeah.
And you went with Nick Foles, who got beat by Mitchell Trubisky. Matt Nagy was asked if they had buyer's remorse. He said, no, not at all. Liar.
Well, look, Damien. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Just finish out the quote. Because of circumstances of having less time on the field, now that I look back, I think that probably affected some things. I think there is some of that there. I'm just going to make excuses because we obviously made a terrible decision. He didn't say those last two sentences I did, but he said the first three.
Matt Nagy's no good. But look, you even talk about all those quarterbacks you named, mm-hmm. all of them. All right, I can't even count them on both of my hands, right? You named all those. Even in the crunch, when you get Nick Foles and you say, you know what, maybe Nick Foles just isn't what I thought he would be. I mean, Josh Rosen was out there a couple days ago. He's got to be better than Mitch Trubisky.
I think Josh Rosen is still out there. I'm not sure that Josh Rosen has been picked up. Wait, no, he was. He practiced
was,
squad with someone.
Tampa Bay.
Okay.
What's your man's squad play? Both of your mans, Bruce Arians and Tom Brady. You're trying to sell me on Bruce Arians.
Well, I'm not trying to sell you on anything. I'm saying football people like Bruce Arians.
He's not a bad coach. I just think he's thirsty. That's my hang up with Bruce Arians.
Why are you against the little thirst trap here and there?
Because you're always going to be in a trap. Yeah, you're going to fall into that trap. Get some unanswered DMs.
Clowney to Tennessee, we touched on that but didn't elaborate much on it. We told you Friday that the reports coming in where it was down to two teams. It was Tennessee or it was New Orleans. It looked like this weekend the focus was going to be on those two. And Mike Florio had a report on Pro Football Talk over the weekend that the Saints explored the idea of a sign and trade with an unspecified team. Now, I don't know if that team is Baltimore, because Baltimore has been thrown into the conversation here this morning of teams that were somehow involved with Jadeveon Clowney. But apparently the NFL would not allow this deal to go through. So what it looks like is there was an idea that a team would sign. This is a very NBA deal. This is going to sound very familiar to virtually every NBA fan that has ever existed. The idea was a team was going to sign Jadeveon Clowney, pay his signing bonus, and then immediately trade Clowney and his remaining salary to the Saints in exchange for a draft pick. The NFL, wink, wink, does not allow you to buy a draft pick, and that is essentially what this deal would have done, and so they shut it down. There's another thing worth pointing out here in the uniqueness of that. I learned that there's only $7 million left under the salary cap for the New Orleans Saints.
Still haven't signed a running back.
What exactly are they negotiating with Alvin Kamara?
I don't know. Remember, I don't know.
I think Alvin Kamara's like owed like $6.5 this season. Yeah. And so maybe he doesn't get a signing bonus and he earns his $6.5 and then he gets a massive 2021 contract. I can't imagine what they're trying to negotiate. And all parties have said they're negotiating a deal. They're trying to get something done before the season starts next Sunday. But learning that they only had $7 million left in cap space, I'm trying to figure out exactly how or for what.
Yeah, I have no idea. And, you know, you can't blame the Saints because, you know, they had to do what they had to do to keep Taysom Hill.
Dude, come on. Please tell everybody you're kidding.
You know I'm kidding. I don't know if we've had the discussion. I don't think there's anybody in the NFL that I get more tired of hearing about than Taysom Hill when they're on TV. I mean, they talk about him crazy because he like catches a ball for 11 yards and he might run for like another 12. And then all of a sudden he's this dynamic weapon that the Saints can't go without. Taysom Hill
got $16 million guaranteed dollars.
Man.
I'm going to repeat that for people who might have missed it. Taysom Hill got $16 million guaranteed dollars, and they haven't locked up Alvin Kamara yet.
That's crazy. If I'm Alvin Kamara, I'm sitting out. I'm sitting out. You heard that? All right, I may be a Niners fan talking there. But, yeah.
That doesn't work out well for running backs, by the way.
Not at all. Melvin Gordon.
Pop quiz, what was the number that Taysom Hill signed for?
Ooh, 16, you got me there.
$16 million. Yeah. $16 million.
Oh, that, Cam that Newton. Deal. Yeah, yeah.
Cam Newton, $1 million.
I'm just shaking my head.
And that's
man.
The base salary. That's not even the, that's just the base salary. He $1 million.
I'm just shaking my head.
Everybody, these are life goals. Find someone. If your husband or your wife, or your significant other, boyfriend, girlfriend, if they don't love you the way that Sean Payton and that organization love Taysom Hill, you should probably find somebody else. Because this is that. I mean, this is a true, this Sean Payton Taysom Hill love. It's special. This is true soulmate love. And if you don't have that Sean Payton Taysom Hill love, I don't know, man. You might have to reconsider things. Taysom Hill's regular season stats: 27 rushes, 156 yards, 19 receptions, 234 yards, 7 total touchdowns last season. $16 million.
I mean, jeez. I don't know.
You want to talk more about Taysom Hill?
He may, you know, look, he's not a scrub. All right, maybe in a different role, he could do some things. I don't know. But I can tell you this, I ain't paying $16 million for Taysom Hill. $16 million.
One other footnote. Taysom Hill, Cam Newton, same age.
Huh, wow. Wait, what? Hold on. What? I feel like Taysom Hill came into the league like 2 years ago out of college. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like he's some kind of second or third year player. Same age. Isn't Cam like 29, 30 years old?
Accurate.
I know Taysom went to BYU, so they got the whole thing where they do the missions and stuff like that. The same age. This is blowing my mind.
Taysom Hill, August 23rd, 1990. Taysom Hill is 30 years old.
Oh, this is blowing my mind.
I'm telling you. Same. And Cam Newton.
How long has he been in the league?
Cam Newton, May 11th, 1989. He's 31 years old. Taysom Hill has been in the league. Wait for it. 3 years.
Come on, man.
That's what I'm saying.
It went on the Mormon missions. It had to be that because he came out at 27? This is crazy. This is crazy, Damon. This is blowing my mind. You talk about numbers and all this. I don't like numbers. No, this is crazy. This is crazy. I didn't know this. This is wild. Taysom Hill's 30 years old. They talking about him like he's Christian McCaffrey. Wow.
If your significant other does not love you the way that Sean Payton loves Taysom Hill, it's not real. Here's numbers that matter and are deserved, and it's Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson signed a very healthy contract extension for a guaranteed figure of $111 million. That puts him behind Patrick Mahomes and just above Jared Goff. It puts his annual salary at about 39-ish per season. Deshaun Watson ranks fourth in the NFL in total QBR since joining the league in 2017. The only passers that he's behind are Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson. Those two guys have won the last two MVPs, and Drew Brees is the most accurate passer in the history of the NFL. Only one other player besides Deshaun Watson has thrown for 25 passing touchdowns and rushed for 5 touchdowns in multiple seasons. That is your guy, Steve Young.
Oh, definitely
Steve
my guy.
Young.
Number 8.
And awesome. Deshaun Watson are the only two quarterbacks to ever do that. So that's the good news.
Okay.
Here's the bad news.
Okay.
And this is why I detest Bill O'Brien and that Houston Texans organization. You want numbers?
Yeah.
Here's a number that's worse than the $16 million for Taysom Hill.
It's going to be hard.
62. He was sacked 62 times in the 2018 season. That's tied for the fifth most in a single season. He's been sacked 106 times in the last two seasons combined.
I was just about to say, you said historically. I was just about to say, those are like David Carr type numbers.
Protect your investment. Protect your quarterback. Protect your franchise. Bill O'Brien and that ridiculous organization in Houston has done nothing, not from the running back position and not from the offensive line position, to protect Deshaun Watson.
I will say this. I will very, in a very small way, I'll defend Bill O'Brien a little bit, kind of.
Don't you do it. I'll leave. I will walk off this show if you defend him.
Didn't they get Jeremy Tunsil?
The dude who was hotboxing in a mask before
got,
that guy?
Sounded like it was a sabotage. Sounded like he got sabotaged. But, yeah, that guy.
That guy.
And he's pretty good. He's pretty good. They got him.
He's not bad. He's not bad.
They got him. So maybe it was by accident. Maybe they weren't even competent enough to be like, we need to protect Deshaun. Let's get him. Maybe it was just like, oh, let's get this guy. Maybe it was by accident. Because everywhere else, he's been incompetent. I agree with you. Yeah,
I can't stand Bill O'Brien. He is going to destroy Deshaun Watson.
I hope
they should. And now they can't fire him because he's paid. You think the Kings got it bad? Dude, Bill O'Brien is under contract for like four more years. Oof.
I was Bill just about O'Brien, to say, maybe he gets fired soon and Deshaun could get somebody. But that's not happening.
Bill O'Brien might be the Luke Walton.
There we go. The daily Luke Walton shot. Well, there we go. There we go. Leave Luke out
true.
Of this.
You're right. That's not true. This doesn't have anything to do with Luke Walton. And Luke Walton doesn't run the organization. Bill O'Brien runs the Houston Texans organization. And that's why he gave away Deshaun Watson's best asset. That's why he hasn't done enough to protect him. I don't even know who's the lead running back in Houston
David
anymore.
Johnson, probably.
Oh,
that's what they
God.
Got in the trade.
Like David. No, that's okay. David Johnson from 2016.
No, not that David Johnson. I mean, not that type of, like, not that version of David Johnson. You're getting the one that really hasn't been able to stay on the field for the last 2 years.
I don't want 2020 David Johnson being.
Yeah, that's what you're getting. That's what you're getting.
Okay.
2020. Yeah.
All right. Well, now you're pissed off about this show shirt is so fun. You're pissed off about Taysom Hill. I'm pissed off about Bill O'Brien.
Damian Burling. Four topics, two arguments, no winners. One-on-one with D-Lo and KC.
Now we're just going to sit here mad for the next 20 minutes. By the way, if you want more football conversation, make sure you're locked in to Damon Ratto and Kolsky, the playmaker.
The playmaker.
Michael Irvin going to be here on ESPN 1320 coming up at 4 o'clock. So make sure you are locked in with us. 4 o'clock, Michael Irvin will be with us. Yesterday in the Bucks win over Miami, you may have heard both Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy going off on a particular call in which there was a review taking place in which they were reviewing, like, maybe who knocked the ball out of bounds, yeah, or something like that.
An out-of-bounds call.
They were reviewing an out-of-bounds call in which Jimmy Butler was clearly fouled on the play, but the refs missed it. And when you go to a replay, you can't review a missed foul call. Mm-hmm. You can only review in that particular situation who the ball was out on. So no matter what happens coming out of that timeout or coming out of that review, you're going to have the call wrong. Does the NBA need to look into changing or expanding their replay system?
Well, initially, looking at that play, I was like, oh, yeah, I mean, this isn't right. This isn't fair. You should be able to review foul calls in that situation, and if you miss the call, be able to do it. But as I thought about it a little bit more, that's a slippery slope. Mm-hmm. Because in this particular case, it was clear as day. Jimmy Butler was hacked on the arm. The ball went out off his hand, but it went off his hand because he got fouled. The foul was clear as day. That's an open and shut case. But then you could get into situations where it's not so cut and dry, right? Where, you know, you're talking about you know, a subjective type of foul call, like whether it's a, you know, a block shot, if it hit, if it, somebody got hit from the back of their hand, you know, is that a foul or is it out? It's a lot of stuff that could, a lot of gray areas there. And as bad as yesterday's was, I think the NBA should keep it the same way and just say, look, when we go to these reviews and these particular out-of-bounds situations, we're only looking at out-of-bounds, not anything that happened outside of that, only out-of-bounds. Because at least in that case, whether, you know, you see a foul call or not, you know it's only about out-of-bounds. And that's all it's about.
Fouls happen a lot. And a lot of them get, you know, don't get called. Sometimes we look at players' reactions, particularly you were watching the Lakers last night. LeBron had several reactions to non-calls against him. And, you know, we see it in particular players. We saw it, you know, before Kobe's big babyface year, his final year. He was notorious for that. He was fouled on virtually every single shot. If you're a big man, you're fouled every time you touch the ball. If we start getting into a situation where, and this is obviously falls into the realms of coaches' reviews and, you know, things like, I don't see how you can efficiently off. But in last night's situation, if you're already reviewing the call and you see it, I don't see the harm in saying, okay, you know what? We missed one. It was a pretty egregious one. You know, you hear the term judgment calls. Like there's judgment calls. The one Jimmy Butler, that was just a bad, it was a missed call. Referees missed calls sometimes. It was a bad one though. It was pretty obvious. It felt like it was obvious in real time. It had to be more significantly obvious, you know, on the replay. I don't see why in that situation when you're already reviewing a particular play, why you can't look at, hey, okay, so we know who the ball went out of bounds on. Why did it go out of bounds like that? Oh, it's because he was fouled. Let's go ahead and get the call here. Now, and for those who don't know the rule, you can review, the only foul that you can review is offensive or charge.
Yes.
Like that can fall under review, but like, you know, coaches can challenge a foul call.
Right.
But it can't be like it has to be a coach's challenge. Yeah, it can't be
this was an official review.
Right. Yeah. It can't be an official review. Yeah. So it's already convoluted as I just tried to explain it to you. I'm with you. You're entering dangerous territory, but in this situation, I don't see if you're calling for the review anyways. I don't know.
I think the review process has gotten out of control in all sports, and
it certainly doesn't move as fast as they claimed it would.
No. I have a rule where I really believe that there should be a timer. You know, 45 seconds. Even put a minute if you want to, and three looks at the replay. Three looks, and if you can't determine after three looks that it needs to be overturned or was confirmed, you have to stay with the call that was on the floor because it's not conclusive. In my opinion, if you can't see it in at least three clips, it's not inconclusive. It's not like, okay, there's a lot of gray area there.
Devil's advocate. What if you're take into consideration, what was the James Harden block shot where you're reviewing, like you were reviewing, like who hit the, where the ball was out of bounds on, you figured it out, and then you had to get the time on the clock.
Okay, that's different.
I'm with
getting
you.
It right. Yeah, that's different.
I'm with
getting
you. It takes it. They have to. We've seen the Secaucus room before. Like, can everybody be watching something different and try to determine, okay, it's out on him, there's 2.6 seconds left?
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't even take that hard, Damian. Like you said, like, okay, this is when the ball was technically out of bounds. Let's look at the TV broadcast that has the time. And press pause. I do this in my living room. Press pause. That's the time that should be on the clock. That should take 15 seconds.
We all want the call right, but we all hate the review process.
It's ridiculous at this point. It's ridiculous. So, in a little melancholy news, Hall of Famer Lou Brock died at the age of 81 at a St. Louis hospital on Sunday. Lou Brock, one of the greatest baseball players to ever play the game for the St. Louis Cardinals. He was the National League's all-time leader in stolen bases with 938. He's in the 3,000 hit club. He had 3,023 hits. He was the first ballot electee to the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum. And before Ricky Henderson came, he was the benchmark for everything stolen bases. Rest in peace to Lou Brock. This is kind of going into the discussion that we have with Tom Seaver and wins and pitchers and things of that nature. The way the game is played today, do you ever see – he still has the National League record for stolen bases. Mm-hmm. Do you ever see that being broken in Major League Baseball again?
No. Not Lou Brock's record, not Ricky Henderson's record. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. I mean, we were looking at 300 wins. Like, do they still steal bases in Major League Baseball? Man, that does not feel like a thing that happens anymore. Yeah. I don't even – yeah, I don't think that happens a ton, and it certainly doesn't happen. I mean, that was part of the excitement of – you know, Lou Brock is before my time, so I got to focus on Ricky here. First of all, it's been amazing reading about what type of person Lou Brock was over the last couple of days.
Absolutely.
He seems to be just like the nicest individual on the planet. Mm-hmm. But what I remember most is Ricky Henderson grabbing that base. Like Lou Brock and his whole family in attendance. Today, I'm the greatest of all time.
You got to say it in the Ricky voice again. Today, I am the greatest of all time. Thank you.
Oh, man.
Sounded like sexual chocolate when he said that.
He did. He did. And that is the most, and it's the most Ricky thing imaginable. Like Lou Brock becoming the all-time steals king. Well, a lot different than Ricky Henderson becoming the all-time steals king. But a long way of answering your question, because I just didn't want to give you a one-word answer, but I think it's pretty definitive. No.
I think about these times and the things that we say, and I don't think it happens in our lifetime, but I don't know, 50 years, I hope I'm around 50 years from now, but 50, 60, 70 years from now, what if the game transformed back to like the 70s and 80s, where people were like, oh, it's old school to just hit home runs all the time. We're going to go back to hitting for average and stealing bases. Mm. I wonder if that would ever happen. My pitchers are, you know, gone are the days of the specialists. I want my pitchers pitching 10 innings if they can. I wonder. These are the things that I either sit up late at night thinking about, or I'm in the shower and I think about, you know, 90 years from now, will the game of baseball revert back to what it was in the 70s? I don't know.
A little too much insight, but that's okay. Like, we appreciate it. Like, that's good. We're all getting to know each other. Like, there are some things, you know, I understand we've got 2 hours to kind of bare our soul to our audience. Some things you can keep to yourself, but, like, that's all right.
Be popping, baby. They be popping.
Okay. Novak Djokovic was 26-0 this season. It's the second best start to start a season on the ATP Tour over the last 30 years. He defaulted yesterday in the round of 16 of the U.S. Open for hitting a line judge with a ball. Is that the right call or an overreaction?
Damian, first of all, I hope nobody looks at me differently, you know, after this. But am I wrong for laughing when I saw that?
I'm looking at you differently for your baseball thoughts in the shower. But
everybody thinks about baseball in the shower, don't they? They either give concerts or think about baseball.
People only think about baseball at one time, and that's not a conversation we're going to get into here. But, yes, you're a jerk for thinking that's funny.
Because I laughed. I laughed. And then, you know, I mean, I didn't want to – obviously, if something seriously would have happened to the young lady, I would have – that wouldn't have been funny. But, you know, she got hit with a tennis ball. It's like you know, what's always funny about, you know, somebody getting hit in the groin with any kind of ball. It's always funny. That always makes you laugh. Damien, tell me, if somebody doesn't get hit, you don't laugh.
It makes the not top 10 every single week. There's going to be somebody getting hit with the ball there for sure. So, but the reason it's not funny to me is because he did it on purpose.
No, see, now that's where we disagree. I don't. So you mean to tell me he meant to hit that young lady in the face?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No. Kenny. Now look, maybe I don't know. Look, I don't know a backstory here. I will tell you that maybe there was something going on building up during that game with the line judge and Djokovic. I looked at it, and I've looked at everything else that I've looked at. I looked at his immediate reaction. I think he was frustrated with what was going on. He did not mean to hit that lady in the face.
That's why
I laughed, because I didn't think it was purposeful.
You're telling me he can pinpoint a ball at 110 miles per hour, but he accidentally hit the woman who is standing about 10 feet away from the ball kid? Come on, man. Stop it.
I don't think he did. Now, if he did, now that is not funny. That is not funny if he did that on purpose. That's cold-hearted right there. I'm not feeling that at all. Let's get that straight. But I don't think he did it on purpose.
He can kiss the side of the court, but he misjudged the ball kid by 10 feet. No, dude. He was throwing a temper tantrum. He was throwing a temper tantrum because he wasn't playing well. His shoulder was hurt. He was cranky. He was being a petulant little child. That's what he was doing.
Yes, but that doesn't mean he tried to hit her.
Okay.
He definitely tried to hit the ball. You know, I agree. I know he was upset and he was hitting the ball, you know, out, you know, into the wall or wherever he was trying to hit it. Yeah, I get it. I don't think he tried to hit her.
No one in the history of tennis hits the ball to the line. Line judges do not hold the ball for the players. There's kids out there who are working for the U.S. Open who do that, who are working for the Wimbledon or for the various courts. They do it.
Mm.
He missed that individual by a mile.
Well, let me just say this.
He did it on purpose.
Let me say this. If he did it on purpose, it's not funny. And it's out of pocket, and he's wrong. If it was an accident and she's okay, I'm laughing again.
And she appears, by the way, she's fine. And it wasn't, in my estimation, it was not an overreaction. This is the rule. And this is, he was fined, I think, $10,000 for it today. Mm-hmm. The USTA released a statement in accordance with the Grand Slam rule book following his actions, intentionally hitting a ball dangerously or recklessly within the court or hitting a ball with negligent disregard of the consequences.
That's exactly what he did. I agree.
The U.S. Open tournament referee defaulted Novak Djokovic from the 2020 U.S. Open.
Well, look, I'll walk it back about that being funny with her getting a face. I will not walk it back about somebody getting hit in the nuts with a ball. That's always funny. I'm always laughing at that.
That's fine. And normally the first person to laugh is the dude who or person who hit the ball that caused it to hit the person's groin. That's usually the first person who's laughing.
Yes, absolutely.
Even if it's a kid. Kids do it all of the time, and I think kids know the hysterical ramifications of that move.
Me and my son might laugh the hardest at that when either one of us get hit in the nuts with the ball.
Believable. Yeah, totally believable.
Last thing here. This is a little fun one here, Damien.
Okay.
Our guy, Andre 3000, one half of the iconic hip-hop group OutKast. There was another Andre 3000 sighting over the weekend, right? And this has been a thing for like the last 10 years. People see Andre 3000 at a Starbucks playing a flute. Just randomly in the airport playing a flute, sitting on a random stoop in Brooklyn, just kind of hanging out. And he's always like really nice. Like people are like, oh my gosh, three stacks. For those of you who don't know, this is like Andre 3000 is arguably the greatest rapper of all time. And a lot of people's view. And he's just like randomly. That's like if you see him at Whole Foods or something like that. And you're like, oh my gosh, this is the best ever. And he's always very nice, takes pictures, things of that nature. This time was no different. Somebody spotted him in front of a mall, playing his flute. And they're like, hey, you're Andre 3000. And they get him on camera. He's smiling, laughing, taking a picture. It's all good. This reminded me to ask you, Damien. Like I said, a lot of people believe that Andre 3000 is the greatest rapper of all time. Now, go ahead.
Before you ask whatever question you're going to ask, is that like saying Bo Jackson is the greatest athlete of all time? Like,
yeah, so this is what I'm getting into, right? So skill-wise and living in the moment, you can say Andre might be the greatest rapper ever. When you talk about actually putting him in that spot and making that list, he doesn't have the resume because he just doesn't rap often enough, and there's not enough body of work by himself to say he's the best ever. Right. So kind of look at what you talk about with Bo Jackson. He may be the greatest athlete of all time. The resume isn't there for somebody to actually make that argument. So in your opinion, Damien, who is that athlete that is akin to an Andre 3000 who is unbelievable at what he did, but doesn't have the resume to say he's the greatest ever?
Oh, man, it's Bo. Okay. Two names come to mind, but I feel like the other one, I think it's Bo Jackson. I think Bo Jackson, the only other name that I'm thinking about, I don't want to say it because it might be, I don't want to steal your answer. I think it's Bo Jackson. if we were to go by the criteria that you just laid out, Southern Playlist at Cadillac Funky Music is just one of the nastiest albums that were ever made. Like everybody,
Aquemini, oh my god!
See, everybody loves those. Like those
are the two best.
Aquemini
is better than Aquemini. Aquemini might be one of the greatest album, top 20 album of all time.
Southern Playlistic is just nasty. And it's grimy. It was their first one. Mm-hmm. Like Players Ball on Rap City. Like, oh man.
Yeah. But Players Came.
Yes, okay, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think the best answer is Bo Jackson, but I have one other athlete in mind that I'll give after you give yours.
Well, I think we're on the same page here, and I was trying to think of a basketball equivalent. I almost went with Wilt Chamberlain. I was thinking of Walt Frazier for some reason. But I almost went with Wilt Chamberlain because nobody puts him at number one of all time, and they talk about him against Bill Russell and all this other stuff, when in actuality, I mean, Wilt was out of this world.
Yeah, but that would be like if – no, I don't. That doesn't work because that's like equating like if Rakim's biggest competition was Vanilla Ice. Because it was Wilt and Bill Russell in terms of stats.
But the stats are so far away from Earth. All right. They're like I always say about Wilt. You have that argument. Cut his stats in half. They're still like 25-15 for his career. Like, if you cut his numbers in half, right, just based on competition, I think he translates. But just that, it's still crazy. But to your point, I wasn't necessarily going to go there. I came up with, and with your help, we brought it up pre-production. I think Barry Sanders might fit that qualification.
That's the other one I still had that one in my head a little bit.
I think he might fit. Barry Sanders. Jackson is great, though. We didn't talk about Bo Jackson, and that's a great one because – to understand and appreciate Andre, I think you almost have to live in that moment and live through, you know, what Outkast was doing when they were hot. And it's almost the same thing for Bo Jackson. To understand how amazing Bo Jackson was, you almost had to be there.
Did they finish after Speaker Box, The Love Below? Was that it?
Yeah, that was it. They haven't done anything else. They did Idlewild. I think that was after that. Idlewild was to the movie. And that was, I liked it.
What was the movie?
I like everything they do.
Was that the Jimi Hendrix movie ever come out? The Jimi Hendrix movie? Wasn't he supposed to play Jimi Hendrix?
Yeah. I think it did come out. I haven't seen it because I didn't think it came out. But I've heard people who have seen the movie.
I remember all of the buzz and excitement about Andre playing Jimi Hendrix. And then it was like, I don't know if it ever happened.
I feel
happened
like it was
not.
An HBO only movie.
Oh, well, was that?
Yeah, I know it didn't come out in
theaters. This is a good point from JR who hit us on social media. He said, you know, Bo Jackson's a great comparison. That being said, Biggie only has two studio albums and is constantly in the GOAT conversation.
As he should be. JR, let's not just relax. Relax, JR.
What you mean?
Relax.
What Biggie shouldn't be in the conversation?
No, he should.
I think that's what he's saying. I think he's equating Biggie to Andre 3000 because we were talking about Andre 3000's resume.
Right,
and how it's just him and... him and Big Boy.
Yeah.
And like, there's no real, I mean, I can't remember. His was The Love Below.
Yeah.
As Hey Ya and The Way You Move were played, it's probably the perfect time to like go out and never make another album again. Cause those songs were played every hour. Like, so each of them were played every hour and 15 minutes. Like that's what a power rotation is on an FM station. And it's
I remember
brutal.
Him performing in like the VMAs, and it was like a year after it came out. And he's like, I'll never forget.
Song?
He goes, all right, here we go for the 7,000 damn time. God damn it. Let's go.
He said, y'all know the damn song. Let's go.
He was over it. Absolutely.
Oh
over
man.
It.
We appreciate you so much.
Sorry,
for being
JR,
with us.
By the way. Sorry. My bad, JR.
Things we love about sports. We got to do this real quickly. Deshaun Watson's family joins him for the press conference. We tweeted it out at ESPN 1320. You can go take a look at that. What do you got?
Serena Williams looking for another major championship. Damn, she's 39 years old. 39. She's killing it.
It'll be a record breaker. Michael Irvin, the playmaker, coming up at 4 o'clock. If you missed any part of today's show, download the radio.com app. Use the rewind feature. Go all the way back to 12 o'clock. We'll get you caught up and we'll get you ready. The start of the NFL season is just 3 days away. Woo. And, of course, we'll recap Clippers Nuggets tonight here on Sacramento's number one sports station, ESPN 1320.